Can you hear me?
There we go. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So good. It just took a little, I think I confused my computer. So.
Oh, okay.
Which, in fact, that's what I was just talking about right as Pal Talk went down. Because of, because I thought we were on half an hour earlier.
Okay.
And, so.
Did I, you know what? I think I might have thought it was just that 1 week. Was that,
No, no, we're on permanent that way unless you want.
Oh, okay.
But
no,
yeah.
That's fine. Let me change my calendar
reflect that. Yeah. Okay,
yeah,
good.
My apologies.
So perfect.
I was thinking that was just that 1 week for some reason. Okay, let me.
Time. So. Isn't it just interesting?
Yeah.
How
yeah.
it is that we get so caught up in this stuff of time and wondering, you know, what.
Yes.
Why is it so pervasive? Of course, because we wouldn't be able to exist here in this illusion if it wasn't for time. Time is the essential. Well, time and space is, this is what I understand, and maybe you have a different notion of this, but this is what I get from, well, first, because I had a dream, and Sigmund Freud and Albert Einstein explained it all to me in my dream.
How fun.
So I got it from the experts about how it really works. But then I found it in the course. It says it in the course in miracles, you know, after I was studying the course, again, going through it. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what those two guys told me in that dream. So, anyway, that time and space are the same thing. Which is Einstein, the whole thing, the relativity and everything is all saying that time and space are the same thing. And it's and they only coexist because actually what happened when reality split, or when we have this tiny man idea in which we thought we split from reality, all that really happened was that time and space separated and became like the aspects of the illusion. They became like the framework for the illusion. So the illusion couldn't exist without time, and the illusion couldn't exist without space. But when they come back together, when they're back together as one thing, then that's eternity. And you can't have split eternity. So it's
right.
That's why it's an illusion. It's just like a little mirror game with reality. But yeah, so space is defined by time. You know that from, like, if you look at the globe, that little round one that you have there in your office or you've seen in your schoolroom, and you see that it's, you know, round, which is not really, but that there are lines of longitude and latitude, and the longitudinal lines are separated into basically 360 degrees, and each one of those is defining what? Hours, minutes, and seconds. And is so the entire our framework of time is based on the Earth turning, rotating, and different parts of the Earth being intersected with the sun.
Right.
So we count it day and night, night and day, and each one 24 hours in between each. And, you know, it's all very slick the way we, you know, we symbolized it to ourselves, and we put that symbol in front of us as little children in schoolrooms. We put that symbol in front of us everywhere to point out to us that the only reason that you have time is because of the distance between things in space. And the only reason that you have space is because you project a future, and you
right, and we need one to reinforce the other, and that reminds me of another line that Ken Wapnick had that has stuck with me, and I recall occasionally, and I think it's just brilliant, as so many of his things are, well, just about everything really. That every, you know, everything I'm paraphrasing this, and if everything in the hands of the ego is propaganda for itself. So space and time, you know, are all propaganda for the ego's thought system when left to the default setting in our mind of you know, the ego speaks first and is always wrong. So that basically becomes an opportunity for us to look at how, you know, we, you know, go through life thinking that this is all reality, but it's all just a massive propaganda system for the ego, unless we challenge it and say, wait a minute, hold on, it's just a cotton picking moment here. Yeah, this is not real. This is just a massive smokescreen over, you know, a crazy idea in my mind. And, exactly. And like you say, it's all interconnected, because how could anything in space possibly exist without some sort of time context, or vice versa? But we don't get taught, well, now we're going to learn about an eternity in school, you know.
No. And it's the thing that's interesting, and I was just listening the way you were phrasing things, and it's almost, well, it isn't almost, it is absolutely unconscious the way that we phrase things to make it appear that this is something that's coming from outside of us.
Right.
In reality, I'm projecting it.
Yeah. That's such a perfect, you know, example of ego propaganda, because the underlying, one of the very basic premises of all of ego's propaganda is that ideas leave their source, and so therefore, you know, there can be an outside and an outside in time and an outside in space, and we think that in the body is the perfect, you know, poster child emissary for that idea, because it says, oh well, I started in existence at a specific time when you know, depending on how you look at it, you know my parents' egg and sperm, you know, created a zygote, or my mother gave birth, you know, usually one of those two, and there's this body that happened, and because it's so convincing and so cinematically dazzling in its special effects, you know, we think, this has got to be me.
Yeah, I gotta this is be where me. I am. This is me. I
exist.
I
got to be me. Daring to do. Anyway, but that's, isn't that incredible how, you know, pervasive and convincing and photorealistic this whole thing is? I mean, it's just, gosh, you know, the spatial temporal qualities that we give it are just, you know, just incredibly elaborate.
Yeah, and what's so weird is that we define it. I mean, we are the ones who make up what it is that we can and cannot experience. And I mean, we are actually defining the experience at this very moment. And, you know, there's a lot of talk, and I'm sure I know you've heard a lot of it and seen a lot of it, of you know, all these other dimensions and other worlds,
uh-huh,
and beings and other you know, like there's multiple, you know, billions and billions of dimensional aspects going on here, and yet we only see this very finite,
right,
dimension. Because of limitation of this body that we made. This place we dwell is totally limiting our entire experience of what is real.
Yeah. I like the way you put that too, because it's because of our identification with our body that time and space seem real, and we're limited to three spatial dimensions and one temporal dimension. It's interesting that people who, you know, in our culture we call scientists, who have given themselves permission to think outside the space-time box a little bit, maybe not all the way to going to the unconscious, unfounded guilt and that ontological system of the belief in separation. You know, like Ken says, you know, when quantum physics, it's not likely any day soon that quantum physicists will say that the thought of the universe itself is an illusion. As along with space and time, and that the foundation for it was unconscious guilt. You know, that's probably not going to happen in any kind of physics textbooks anytime soon, so I wouldn't hold your breath. But it's interesting that there's actually, you know, having studied this a little bit, particularly in the film, it is a film. It's a vast movie. In the realm of, you know, what's become known as sacred geometry over the last couple of decades, mostly due to a colleague named Drumvalo Melchizedek, and I have an extensive amount of material about this on the geometrycode.com website, including the links page, you know, the resources page that has a whole section on, you know, higher dimensional geometries and polytopes, as they're called. That there's actually this sort of interesting digression, but I think we can, you know, keep it in the context of the metaphysics, and I do this relatively frequently on that website, and in conversations I have with another young man named David Cohen about once a month on his LA Talk radio show, we talk about this a lot. Anyway, the whole idea that, you know, space-time is real is just so completely, like you say, founded on the idea that we're limited to three dimensions of space and one dimension of time, and that they're, you know, we forget that they're interlinked for starters, and there's other aspects of the dream, even within the dream, that aren't limited in that way. And one of them that I think is fascinating is that there's things called tachyons that physicists have detected and measured and are, you know, they're aware of, and they explain a lot of things in the current model of modern, what we call modern physics. And these tachyons are faster than light particles or waves or whatever they are. Anyway, they have one spatial dimension and three temporal dimensions. Isn't that cool?
Whoa.
Isn't that kind of fun? I mean, it's one of those little, you know, impress your friends with modern physics trivia things, because what do we do with tachyons? Because nobody's ever, you know, at least most people I don't know say, oh, I just watched a whole bunch of tachyons. You know, no, that's probably not too, you know, it's for most people a theoretical concept, but it's corroborated by, you know, what we call modern physics. But it's cool that, you know, it's just opposite to what we have. We have three dimensions of space, one dimension of time, and because of the limitations imposed by the thought system that we've adopted, and we think that's a big deal, and we'll look at all the things that we can imagine in that, and it is imagination, and it's not, because there's no reality here, as the course points out. But within the constraints of that, there's also an imaginary science in an imaginary world that says, oh yeah, I can have these things called tachyons that are faster than light, you know, elements, particles, whatever, waves, you know, that have only one spatial dimension, one dimension of space, and three dimensions of time, three temporal dimensions. So that's kind of cool. So maybe tachyons, you know, travel in three dimensions of time at once. And we can't imagine what that might be. And that kind of leads to the whole idea of these higher dimensional polytopes, which I have examples of. I got to meet, when I lived previously in California, now that I'm back here, up north and a little east of here in the foothills, there's a place called Dutch Flat. And when I was living in the Grass Valley, Nevada City area, a decade or more ago, probably closer to two decades ago now, I got to meet a friend and a colleague named Russ Towle, T-O-W-L-E. He's no longer with us. He passed on a few years ago. I got an email from his sister who informed me of this, which I was sad to hear. But I got to meet with him one afternoon at his place in Dutch Flat there, and he showed me some dazzling geometric models that he had done, and I have links to them on my website. I've kept some of those files that he gave me access to and permission to share on the Geometry Code website on the resources page. But he's got examples of animations that he's done that give us a glimpse of what a higher dimensional geometry. And again, this is all, you know, this is sort of like the little asterisk that says this is a massive aside here relative to our normal metaphysical conversation, but I'll steer it back to that. But these higher dimensional polytopes basically are geometric objects that are completely consistent within the laws of physics and mathematics as we understand them within the context of this dream. But what I think that what they hint at is the fact that it's all made up. But another thing that Ken Wapnick says, I think that ties into this, is that, you know, the Holy Spirit is 100% sane, the ego is 100% insane, but both of them are completely 100% consistent in their sanity and insanity, you know, respectively. And so as part of the insanity of the ego's thought system, there's this totally consistent dream that is the veracity of which we don't question because it seems so freaking real, right?
Exactly.
You know, it just seems so real. And one of the things that these geometries suggest is that we think that there's three spatial dimensions of you know, the X, Y, and Z from your grade school and or high school and or college days or whatever, or maybe Khan Academy or whatever you've used to for self-study, and all the amazing resources on the web, Wikipedia, whatever. There's Wolfram Math World, which I think is amazing. I have links to those all on that same page. But the dimensions of space, apparently we have what we think of is, and I'll do a quick walkthrough of dimensions 0 through infinity. Dimension 0 is really at the realm of spirit, because it basically says time and space don't exist, and so what's left over we think is nothing, but it's really everything. And of course, you know, that's never discussed in you know, the mystical or avant-garde maybe, or the mathematicians and geometers that study this stuff, they never talk much about that, because it's like, well, what's there to say, you know? But well, really everything, but
everything,
we think it's nothing.
But
right. So then you go from 0 to 1. Okay, one dimensional is a point, right? And from a one, well, actually, a zero dimension is a point, and then one dimensional is a line, because you just have, you know, one dimension means you have. So correct the previous statement. It's really zero dimensional is the point, and the point has no space, and no time, because if there's no dimensions, then it can't go anywhere, right? But then ideas never leave their source would be completely consistent with that. So, but
no,
now, once we go to duality, then we get to one dimension. We get to the dimension of, a line. And then, if you take a, you know, piece of chalk on a chalkboard or pencil on your paper and draw a perfectly straight line, which of course we can't do, we would have this theoretical idea called a line. And of course, Einstein said space is curved, so you know, even that's, you know, it's not going to be straight. But when you have a line, you can have points along that line, and you can have, you know, objects, theoretically that are just points, which gets back to that zero dimension again. Which, you know, what's the point of all this, right?
What's the point, right?
What is the point?
What is the point?
Okay, so then in our little adventure through dimensions, you get to a more interesting one, which is two-dimensional. Well, of course, on one-dimensional, you can have just about anything that we polarize. And there's where the law, you know, once you've got duality, you've got polarity. You can have a we and a they. You can have a point that represents a we, a point that represents they. We can have a point that represents hot, a point that represents cold, a point that represents night, and a point that represents day. But those are still fairly meaningless, because there's no other dimensions with which to quote unquote manifest them or to express them, right? So let's move on back again to the two-dimensional realm. And that's what Edwin Abbott called Flatland in this wonderful little essay about a century ago. And he described a world where all these creatures, you know, like on a piece of paper, only had two dimensions. And so in the realm of Flatland, what you have is just objects that then the topology is it a closed circle, you know, or a, you know, like an amoeba looking in a microscope, you know, is this little flat blobby creature. Of course, amoebas aren't really flat, but that's how we see them through microscopes, right? Because we only get two-dimensional images of, once you put the slide cover on the slide, they get squished out, right? Although the amount of water that's between the slide and the slide covers, I remember from high school biology, is a finite amount. So they probably can move around pretty good. So amoebas and paramecium and other bacteria, you know, that we look at that are very, very tiny, but, you know, enormous in terms of the size of relative to size of quarks and all that, you know. But, you know, these things do have a little room to move around in between the slide and the slide cover, right, until they finally run out of steam or fuel or whatever, and that appears. That's why you have to look at them pretty quick. But but, you know, that's the world of the flatland, and the way that we perceive it is that it's just that, you know, you can't go up and down, you can only go left and right. Well, you can't go in and out of the slide, let's say. There's no z-axis. With the tip of my hat to Buddy Dave there in Pueblo, that's the name of his 3D graphics consulting concern, Dave Van Dyke. Kudos to Dave. I think I'm probably going to talk to him tomorrow. Anyway, I'm digressing a bit to this morning, aren't I? But we'll get.
No,
we'll get
you know, it's interesting to hear this, and I just wanted to point out. Hang on just a second. I'm sending somebody a message. But the website where I read in A Course in Miracles, and I use it like every day, all, you know, is called unitedbeings.com. And on when you go there to read A Course in Miracles, there is a link to a book to read for all in its entirety, Flatland. And you can click on that link and you can actually read that book. And it's trippy.
Yeah, it's a fun one, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's really trippy. Yeah. And it really, it gives you some thoughts about what the heck is this? And I mean, it really puts you into a way of thinking that you could imagine this alter dimensional existence. And so, you know, I would recommend anybody to go there, unitedbeings.com, and read that. But also another thing is I watch a lot of Doctor Who, and I don't know if you watch Doctor Who, but
I've caught only just a little bit of it, so I'm not like a well-versed in it person. I just know just enough to be dangerous, which isn't much at all.
Well, I'll tell you, I think Stephen Moffat, the guy who writes most of the episodes, and he must study A Course in Miracles, because honestly, or, you know, his all of the things that happen in time and space in all these Doctor Who adventures are so eye-opening as far as potential and possibility of what could happen, or how time and space actually work together. I would highly recommend it if you have Netflix. Just go on and watch especially the ones with Matt Smith as the Doctor. It's some profound insights into the workings of time and space. And you know, of course, I do that for diversion. It's just fun, and I enjoy Doctor Who quite a bit. You know, as far as, you know, the lessons they learn, and it's you know, another classroom. Uh-huh. But I was going to ask you something here, Bruce. It's because this obviously is fascinating. It's fascinating for me. It's fascinating for you. I know a lot of people who are just like so intrigued and fascinated by this. And I have two opinions, and of course, you know, or two thoughts anyway, about it. One
Don't
is,
we all.
Yeah, and only two, which is a miracle in itself. but one is that, to see the mechanism of it. How does this illusion work? You know, what is it that is actually making it appear? And then. All of these other dimensions, you know, are, well, first off, there's no reality to any of it. It's all a part of the illusion and the dream.
Right.
And so, you know, and so when I look at it, you know, I'm grateful that I understand somewhat, some small portion of it, because it does help me to see that there's something beyond what my own thinking can show me from my experience.
Exactly.
And so that's the, you know, that's a use for that, a purpose for it that is, you know, I think really, really helpful and essential. And, you know, there's maybe some people that you have to show them to the gnat's ass exactly what, you know, this is exactly how it works. Now, do you see how what you think you see cannot be real? And you, you know, some people need that, you know, that in depth. But really, it's all just describing something that doesn't even really exist in right. order to switch our thinking from this smallness that we believe that we are to seeing the bigger picture of what is. And so I guess the opinions are, you know, what good does it do to look at all the illusion and analyze the illusion, because you're just analyzing the illusion. But then on the other hand, maybe only by analyzing the illusion can I be convinced that it can't possibly be real. So
yeah, good point. And I think that's a very important point, is that I keep coming back to Ken Wapnick, because he's been such a, you know, powerfully inspiring force in my life in the last few years. And one of the things phrases that he uses, and I've actually made a little calendar that I just updated for 2016, and it's on the ACIM blog website. It's called a recovering bliss in any calendar. But the term bliss in any comes from Ken, I believe, and that was what he used to call course students in particular, that basically, you know, were convinced that all they had to do, for example, if there was a, you know, a terrorist activity or a famine or a it's typically a world event, you know, of seemingly vast proportions, you know, like a tsunami or a pandemic or whatever, you know, just pick your issue or something that seemed to not be how we wanted it to be, basically. That we could just kind of, you know, beam love at it, kind of thing, and make it go away. Well, but what basically, you know, Ken is saying is that's the ego's, you know, just playing right into the heart of the ego's hands is basically saying, oh, there's no, you know, problem here. This is actually a great world, and you know, not to worry about it. Just you know, enjoy how beautiful ego's world is and all this. But I think what you point out is really, really, really important. I'm going to hopefully get back to a couple of things that you talked about that I want to address and respond to in terms of online resource. But the bliss in anything, I think, is one such an important one, because we all do it in different ways. And I call myself a recovering bliss in any. So I found a baker's dozen of quotes from the course that I thought were particularly challenging. And I suspect other students of Course in Miracles will find them similarly challenging. That's why I put them on a calendar. It's like, oh, I can stare at this quote every day for a month and you know, have a pretty picture on the wall, but a challenging quote to remind me that I need to look at all the things that are going on in this world, not as something to beam light at and try to make it better within the context of the dream, but to recognize that there is, you know, like that real alternative section in chapter 31, the last chapter of the text in the Course in Miracles suggests, you know, there is no hope in the world, and that when we, you know, after we go down all the roads that the ego offers, if eventually we'll realize that and generalize and see that they're all the same, but we need the specifics, like you point out, Lynn, is that are crucially important, that we take what seems to be happening to us in the little tiny realm of space and time that we think we're in as bodies and as personas, that we've, you know, with the body's the poster child of this little seemingly separate self persona, and use that as our classroom, and hand each specific one after the other that appears to be coming to us, forgetting that it's really coming from us, as the classroom of our mind, to undo the ego, to basically say, no, I'm gonna use ego's prison, and each brick that it throws at me, instead of building the prison taller and more secure, I'm going to dismantle, using each brick of space-time, each little brick of what comes at me in terms of a forgiveness opportunity, whatever my grievance might be, whatever my irritation might be, whatever my annoyance or blame or outrage or victimization, you know, whatever negative feeling or emotion or thought that seems to be an upset outside me, I can realize I'm never upset for the reason I think. It's not about the space-time dream. I'm upset because I chose to believe that it was possible to throw God under the bus, to destroy perfect oneness, and to somehow create, or, well, that would be the course, not how the course would be, but to make a universe. And we all collectively did this, not as individuals, but as one insane, 100% insane thought. We made up a universe that is so convincing, so photorealistic, so, you know, precisely accurate moment to moment in terms of the, quote, laws of physics in a universe that doesn't exist, that we would fall for it hook, line, and sinker. You know, the the mindless matrix droids that just wander around thinking, oh, this has got to be real. I'll use this fake science for the safe fake body to perpetuate a fake world that I think I'm in a fake thought system, you know. How great, how incredibly, greatly convincing, and what a hoax this is. But anyway, I'm rambling on again, but I just think it's fascinating, isn't it, that we have this incredibly powerful mind that we use to make this thing up. So what I wanted to get back, and thank you for that, Lynn, I wanted to get back to, since you mentioned the United Beings website,
yes,
as a resource for A Course in Miracles, there's also a couple others that I bear mentioning for that capacity, and that is obviously the maybe not obviously, but for people who haven't discovered it yet, another place where you can have the entirety of the text online is the Miracle Distribution Center, and out of Southern California, they're sort of like a third organization after the initial two sister organizations that has had a lot of resources, including a list of all the study groups online for many years, and I'm really grateful to what they're doing in that respect. I've actually listened to the entire conference that they had through a link that a friend sent me earlier this year, and it was some interesting stuff. John Mundy is a frequent speaker there. Tamara Morgan of the Foundation for Inner Peace, who I'm actually working with to redo the another website that has the entirety of the text, which probably I would imagine every course student who's familiar with resources for A Course in Miracles on the web should be familiar with, if they're not already, is acim.org, which of course is the original publisher. That's basically Judy Scutch Whitson's website, and all the folks there, of which there are numerous, who have from literally day one of the course, in terms of its being out there in the world in the form that we're familiar with it, and now its variants, has diligently worked to share it. And there's over two dozen, there's about two dozen international versions in different languages. And there's actually, if you go to acim.org, which I will do right now just to follow along, and I'm actually working on a new website for that. If you click on online lessons on the left navigation, this probably will change as we go through it, but you can see that there's workbook introduction, workbook table of contents, calendar daily lesson, my daily lesson, lesson selector, and then there's four new ones that are relatively new, and these actually you can toggle the sentence number and the paragraph numbers on for it, but only in those languages currently, but I'm working on that.
Wow.
There's a French, German, Spanish, and Portuguese edition. So for anybody that might have friends that are fluent in those languages or have some fluency yourself, these are new resources that are very cool. And as you can see on the sidebar on the right, there's a whole list of international flags, and there's a translation program. So if you are in capacity to support what the Foundation for Inner Peace is doing in Marin County, California, here's a way to do it. And you can, if you know, look, for example, you have relatives in another country and you want to support the efforts to have a website in that language for A Course in Miracles, there is the place to do it. And of course, it goes without mentioning that the third website, which is in my mind the first one I usually go to for anything, is facim.org, and that is totally loaded with the work of Kenneth and Gloria Wapnick. And Ken, of course, is not with us anymore. There's a wonderful list of tributes at the top in the little purple banner that was added to the masthead a year or two ago. I guess it's been almost 2 years now. This next month it'll be 2 years, I think.
Since 2 years in December, yeah.
Since the illusion of Ken, whose message was to remember that he and every seemingly separate self in it are illusions. Yeah, the irony of that hasn't been lost on me, but I remember it. That this whole space-time dream drama is just a massive dream, and what a convincing one it has been, but we can use every seemingly minute or massive scrap of space-time to remember that it's just a dream. So would it be appropriate for me to jump back where we were going with the multiple dimensions?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
That was like a little commercial break there about what ACIM resources. I love it. So, yeah.
Yeah. So thank you for reminding me of the United Beings, because that's a good one, too. The other three that I pull on from a lot is the Miracle Distribution Centers. If you click under Services, which is the third tab on their new website, relatively new website, and then go to A Course in Miracles Lookup, which is, depending on how your screen size is, it's the first one in the second row on that page. And if you click there, you will see that you've got the Table of Contents Text Workbook for Students Manual for Teachers. And basically, all three volumes are online there, and they're searchable, which is nice. And I'm lobbying, if that word is appropriate. It's not a word that I actually use usually with much approval of for my own mind, but I'm sort of lobbying for the idea of putting the text and the manual on the ACIM.org website. We're working on that, and so hopefully that'll come about in due time. It'll probably take a while because there's a lot there to do. But in the meanwhile, as you point out, the unitedbeings.com site has all of that, and the Miracle Distribution Center has those other two volumes. But if you're just doing the workbook lessons, by all means, go to acim.org, and then for just so many incredible resources, the facim.org has books and audios and DVDs and CDs and MP3s. And of course, now in this last year, they've added the streaming workshops. I just, haven't finished listening to, I've got it in a window in the corner of my second monitor, Laurel Reeves and Jeffrey Siebert and Rosemary Lasasso have been team teaching these academy classes that are picking up perfectly where Ken, tough act to follow, but they're doing an incredibly good job at it of just moving, without missing a beat. No note in heaven's song was missed and neither was the momentum in what Ken's work was doing and was intended to do. They're putting out programs on the facim.org website that are just wonderful. I can't recommend them highly enough. So if you can't get to Temecula, California for these typically monthly seminars and then the longer academy classes and then the weekly, shorter classes that they have just ongoing, they do have the seminars, many of the seminars and the academy classes available now for very reasonable amounts via telestreaming. Video streaming through your computer. And originally, earlier this year, the technical quality was, marginal at best, but they've gone with a different provider, Daycast, in this case, I guess. And it's been great. For me, at least, it's been relatively flawless. I haven't had any hiccups in it.
I want to switch this over to Daycast.
Yeah, yeah.
Change from PalTalk to Daycast is what I wanted.
Yeah. It's been really good, and the quality of what they're presenting is just wonderful. In fact, I had a conversation with another one of my monthly conversations lately has been with C.A. Brooks, who's also in the Denver area. I haven't met in person, but we've had great conversations. And she has a weekly show, since we're kind of spending a bit of time on resources for A Course in Miracles, in addition to, you know, the Pal Talk, Awakening Together, and on that whole realm of resources. I also would recommend C.A. Brooks's her weekly show on A Course in Miracles, which is on 1-2 Radio, and it is on 8 a.m. on the West Coast here in California, and appropriately scaled for your time zone on Friday mornings. She has an hour show on A Course in Miracles on 12radio.com, and it's excellent. And I'm grateful to have been about a monthly guest on that show for a number of months now. And but she really, you know, really gets the course and does a great job interviewing people. And we, you know, we have a lot of fun, and all the people that are on there are, you know, avid course students, and she shares some great stuff. So just a plug in for CA and all that she's doing there. And, and then I've got my own little blog that I try to keep up, and mostly it's a treading water exercise, but I have so much fun with it, which is acimblog.com, and I try to list as much as I can of all those kind of resources, and it tends to be mostly, you know, things that I'm either involved in or become aware of, because, you know, that's the seemingly, you know, remote and isolated little bit of my space time dream drama, but that's what I have to share. So by all means, if anybody has resources that you would like to share, and I'll put the United Beings one, though. I'm not sure if that's on the resources page for ACM blog, but it should be, as long as, along with the others I just mentioned, which are all, I know are already there. So anyway, just after that aside, back to the other side of the dimensions, you know, and now for something completely different. That we were talking about the 0, 1, 2 and beyond dimensions. So the zero dimensions was the point, which of course is everything, because there is no dimension. It's all a dream. that is the point. So our language gives us some nice clues that, you know, geometry and mathematics can be just like anything else, used by the Holy Spirit instead of the ego. And so everything is fair game for translation by the Holy Spirit instead of misinterpretation by the ego. Then we go to the one dimension, which is the flat land, which, like you point out, that the United Beings homepage has a link to. Actually, it's on the Course in Miracles site. It's got the A Book for All to Read in Its Entirety, Flatland. And if you click on that, you'll get the whole Edwin Abbott book there, which is a fun read. And so flatland is really basically, and I used to, when I gave presentations on sacred geometry more frequently, which I still do when I'm asked to, you know, hourly, half day, multi-day workshops on sacred geometry, because there's a lot of interesting stuff there. I usually use when I cover this material and the two dimensions, I think of, you know, what would be the equivalent to a National Enquirer headline in a flatland world. So let's say, imagine that we were restricted to a piece of paper type of a metaphor, you know, that we didn't have an up and down. There was only left and right and forward and backwards, you know, in terms of our X and Y dimensions, but there wasn't a Z dimension, right? So if that was the case, and you were a three-dimensional critter and you wanted to play a little innocent prank on a flatlander and there are two dimensions, what simpler way to do it would be just to poke a pencil through their paper reality, right? So imagine that you have a pencil and suddenly you're in flatland, and the first thing that pokes through is the pencil lid. So you see this dot that becomes a little black dot that becomes a bigger black filled in circle, because, you know, in relative, of course, the vision is kind of a tricky metaphor even in this reality, but let's just imagine that you can see this little dot, and we're actually having to stretch it a bit in order to picture this, but you have to do that in any dimension other than three, because that's the one that we gave ourselves permission in this context to be aware of, right? So imagine this pencil now is going through your reality. So you see this black dot becoming bigger and bigger, and then very shortly it becomes a brown dot when you get to the wood of the pencil, and then it becomes just almost miraculously, and goes from a brown dot to a slightly larger yellow hexagon, right? And there's the painted surface of, you know, a typical pencil. And then it stays this yellow hexagon for the longest time. And you walk around it and you just see this yellow line, because in flatland, that's all you can see is a line. And of course, your eyes are just lines. If you can get the eyes to the surface of your flat body. But then after a while, that yellow circle becomes a, let's say, a yellow hexagon becomes a green circle. And then a pink, slightly smaller pink circle, which is going through the little metal band, and then the eraser, and then it disappears. It just magically, it appears magically out of nowhere and disappears. But to an outside observer, it's just a pencil going through a piece of paper. No big deal, right? But then you have, from the Flatlander's perspective, you have this paranormal event that's happening, and wow, isn't that amazing, right? But we think it's a big deal. We think it's, just an amazing, paranormal phenomena. But that's actually no different than other dimensions that we're not aware of influencing these three dimensions. So I like that metaphor. So it turns out that if you go from one dimension, which is a line, to two dimensions, you have in two dimensions you have a whole class of shapes called polygons, and you probably remember that from, high school geometry. The simplest being a triangle, a three-sided shape, and because if it's two-sided, it's just a line again. Then you collapse back down to one dimension. But if you go to the two dimensions, the first regular polygon, if they're all the same sides and angles, is a triangle. Then you go to a square, then a pentagon, then a hexagon, and then a heptagon, octagon, nonagon, decagon, and so forth. And there's actually an infinite number of regular polygons, as they're called, that have the same side length and the same angle. And so those that infinite number of polygons, if you go out to infinity, for all intents and purposes, you have a circle, right? Does that make sense? So
Absolutely,
that's
yeah. That's, but you will never ever get there. Is that you'll never get to an actual circle because there's infinite, yeah.
But mathematicians can come up with this hypothetical infinite polygon, and we call it a circle. And it's actually a transcendental thing, which is kind of cool, because even in using the language of mathematics, not only is it irrational, the number pi that defines the relationship between a circle's circumference and diameter. And of course, it's another area where our language gives us clues, because we think that something that cannot be divided is, we think of it as rational when we take it and divide something. And it's irrational if it can't be divided. So again, just another way of looking ha at how our language gives us clues as to how ego's thought systems work.
Well, yeah, and
And
even the word rational comes from the word ratio, I believe.
exactly.
And
Yeah, exactly.
so
To divide.
how does that set with an idea of what we can, because the word rational basically to me means it makes sense.
Right.
If it's
And I
rational,
just thought
it
of
makes sense.
another play on words that it's the rat IO. So we think we're indebted to the ego's ratty thought system.
That's excellent.
I'll have to use that one from now on, but I hadn't even thought about that one. But yeah, so this rational the rational number system doesn't include the number pi. And there's also a set of numbers called transcendental numbers, which can't even be expressed as a polynomial expression over another polynomial expression, which raised to another power, raised to other dimensions. So even just in two dimensions, a circle has a beyond dimensionality aspect to it. So even in the level of form, there's always a hint, there's always a feeling or an awareness, which is, I think, we're drawn to curves and to circles and spheres and things that have a flow to them that remind us of the nonlinear nature of reality, and that have, when one thing just smoothly goes from one thing to another, there's the awareness that oh yeah, maybe this world Isn't really about separate things, but one thing smoothly flows into the other because it's all one thing. Ideas don't leave their source. There is no other. There's no out there, as physicist John Wheeler says. So that gives us a further clues. So anyway, we've gone from zero to one to two dimensions. Now three dimensions, that's the realm that us, flatlanders plus one dimensional critters think we live in. And it's so convincing because, man, you can do a lot with three dimensions. You can make up galaxies, quasars, and solar systems and stars all the way down through the realm of sizes where we think we live on this little planet down to molecules and atoms and just subatomic quarks and things. And isn't that fascinating? And it keeps our minds so preoccupied with all this stuff. And woo, yada, yada, yada. But within that, mathematicians have discovered within the context of that particular dream that we call space-time in three dimensions, there are in three spatial dimensions exactly five regular polyhedra. And that means five shapes that have the same shape, each of which of those shapes is made up of a regular polygon. So this is what in sacred geometry has become, kind of the buzzword ever since Drumville Melchizedek took some of the, prior work, which I won't get into. But anyway, you start with essentially a triangle that now has three lines coming up from it out of the paper, so to speak, and making a three-sided pyramid. That's a tetrahedron. And then the more familiar shape to most people is a cube, which is just six squares, right, put together in a very specific pattern. And then you have three other shapes that are, two of them made with out of triangles. One's called an octahedron. If you have a four-sided pyramid, it's sort of similar to the Great Pyramid in Egypt, which is another whole hour of fun that I like to talk about. With this geometry and so forth, but if you take instead of using the dissimilar sided triangles of the Great Pyramid, if you imagine four triangles all having the same length on every side, and put those together, you get a four sided pyramid. And if you put two of those back to back, you have what's called an octahedron, and that is exactly eight faces or hedra, which is what hedron is, just means side. And poly means many, so polyhedron is many-sided. So the third in this imaginary pantheon of mathematical curiosities that, again, like the ego, is 100% consistent, just as our real self, our Holy Spirit awareness reminds us of our real self, is 100% sane. The ego's insanity is 100% insane, but it's also 100% consistent. And so the next shape in this pantheon or assembly of five regular polyhedrons is the icosahedron, which has icosa just means 20. So if you imagine a shape that's becoming more spherical, just like the polygons were becoming more circular in two dimensions, the polyhedra are becoming more spherical as you add more faces to make up a shape that exists in three dimensions. You probably have seen a soccer ball. So now if you take a soccer ball and imagine the black pentagons, and the older ones anyway, before they started making all these fancy colors and whatnot. But in the older black and white soccer ball, if you imagine all the hexagons are white and the pentagons are black, maybe if you haven't noticed, that's usually the older style of soccer balls. If you imagine squeezing the pentagons to where they don't exist and then flattening out the faces, those hexagons would actually become triangles, and there would be 20 of them. And those 20 white triangles, having been hexagons, having squeezed out the pentagons, and flattened out instead of curved, would be an icosahedron. So actually the technical term mathematically for a soccer ball shape is a truncated icosahedron. And that gets into Archimedean solids. But the Plato was the first person, the same philosopher that had the metaphor of the cave, the allegory of the cave that Ken Wapnick refers to wonderfully so many times, that we see just a shadow. Well, Plato, his philosophy was also his hobby. So maybe I was one of his students in a past life. Who knows? But
oh, but come on,
because I love Plato's metaphors and you know, he was such a champion of the idea that you know, this isn't reality. We're seeing a shadow, you know. And one of Ken's last Lighthouse articles was, "This is not a pipe," and it was talking about Magritte's painting, you know. And he says, "No, it's a representation of a pipe. Everything here is a representation. Everything's a symbol. It's an icon." It's, you know, we may not be able to click it and make it do something, but everything that we think of as a material object is a representation of a thought system. And that was Plato's whole message. So we've been getting this for centuries, long before, you know, A Course in Miracles arrived on the scene. We've had hints. And before that, there were others, you know, in ancient Egypt and so forth.
Well, because we've always known. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and we only have 3 minutes left. But, you know, it's what these things are here to remind us is of something that we've always known. And, you know, I think, you know, Jesus talks about it so beautifully in the Course when he's talking about, you know, it's the song that you hear that is you. It's an ancient melody that is calling to you, and that you hear it, and you may, for me, it's like every single one of these things is like a note or something that just calls to me that says, hey, you know, there's something. I feel it viscerally. I feel it in my chest, in my heart, when these things, when I see these things and they click into some kind of meaning to me, that I see or I feel a connection to my truth. And so that's why we're fascinated by this stuff. We keep going back and looking
exactly.
at it and thinking
exactly.
about it and wondering about it and trying to put it together, because we know that there's a key somewhere and
yeah.
you know, we can feel it. And so these, I mean, right now we're being, you know, we are giving ourselves a major, like, alarm clock, wake-up call through all these things, through science, through metaphysics, through, you know, entertainment, through songs, music, books, TV shows, articles in magazines and on Facebook. We're just inundating ourselves with these reminders of our truth, and, you know, because we long to break through, but the ego thought system is so pervasive that
yes.
you really have to, it's like the strongest Velcro ever invented, and you have to actually unhook every single little loop that is
right.
hooked in order to get away from it. You can't
yeah.
just... you can't just wish that it was gone and don't want to think that way anymore. You really
right.
have to unhook all these things, and the only way to do it is to look at them. So,
right. yeah, and that's where forgiveness, our practice of, as Gary and Raj teachers discussed, quantum forgiveness comes in moment to moment. We unhook our identity to all these different dimensions, no matter how we want to slice or dice them, or think of them. By, like you say, Lynn, exactly, just that moment-to-moment practice of forgiving the dreamer and remembering that, you know, we don't have to identify with a past that doesn't exist in a dimension of time that doesn't exist, and that we really are eternal beings. And do I have a minute to just finish the one thought on these higher dimensions?
Sure. I don't think Ken will mind, and Ken will
okay,
mind
okay.
right on the board, and I'll just tell you. Yeah, he says, yeah.
Oh, okay, great. Great.
So go ahead.
Well, just to finish the thought, it's just kind of fun stuff is that in so we in three dimensions we have exactly five regular polyhedron, the icosahedron, the dodecahedron, which we didn't talk about, is made out of 12 pentagons, the tetrahedron, octahedron, and a cube. So there's exactly five of those, and I mean it's just kind of a little fun trivia that again is part of our ego world that we can see how amazingly sophisticated that it has become to create this thing, not only just in the three dimensions we think we're, but in four dimensions, there's exactly six regular polychora, which are the term given these higher dimensional shapes, the most familiar of which you can Google and find lots of examples is a hypercube, which is a four-dimensional cube, but there's also five others, one of which is not analogous to those other polyhedra. And then In dimensions 5 through infinity, mathematicians have proved that there are exactly three regular polytopes, which is the name, and we can't even wrap our head around it because we can't picture, just like the people in Flatland can't picture three dimensions, we can't picture those other dimensions. So that's why earlier in the hour I talked about Russell Toll's animations, because he basically made animations of these higher four-dimensional objects that by taking three-dimensional renderings on the computer, and each frame of the animation of this animation is a slice, a three-dimensional slice through a four-dimensional object. And if you haven't seen them, they're really cool. When I post this on ICM blog, I'll put links to all this stuff, and you can check it out. But it's a lot of fun. But again, it's like you say, Lynn, it's all for the purpose when we are mindful to turn it around, as Byron Katie would say, forgive the dreamer and go home and holding each other's hand. So thank you again, Lynn, for sharing this hour with me, and love to all, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Thank you so much, Bruce. And I will send you the link to this recording. So I do appreciate that you post the recordings. It's awesome. Anyway, thank you, Bruce. And I'm going to hang up from you and turn the mic over to Ken Mallory.